We may say that when we sit, we're expressing our true nature. We might say, when we sit, we're just being who we already are. We might say that by sitting and through sitting, we become who we potentially are. There's subtly different ways of thinking about it that can shape our experience of practice. And they involve the difference between imagining that there is something inside of us that we're endeavoring to, on the one hand, discover, something of a true self that lies hidden and deep inside and needs uncovering, or thinking that there's a latent capacity that needs to be developed, and that through practice, like practicing any kind of skill or craft or exercise, we develop that capacity. Or we can say that in our sitting, everything is already present and complete, and it's just a matter of recognizing it rather than making anything new at all. This kind of question comes up when we look at koans like, show me your original face. Where is that? Hidden deep inside? Does something obscure it? Is it present all the time? Where is it now? I've just started reading a new biography of Simone de Beauvoir by Kate Fitzpatrick, I believe her name is. And Beauvoir is famous for saying that one is not born a woman, but one becomes a woman. And we can understand that in light of the existentialist slogan that existence precedes essence. The idea being that there is no essential nature like being a woman, like being having a particular gendered identity that simply develops or is uncovered, but that this is something that is created in the course of a lifetime through some combination of social conditioning and conscious choice. And Beauvoir is particularly interested in sort of deconstructing all the things that has been socially taken as natural or givens, and seeing the historical and cultural conditioning involved in that, and where choice and option could exist when nothing but accommodation or compliance that existed before. particular, she wanted to see that women are not defined purely in relation to men, that their subjectivity and their identity was independent of that kind of social expectation. And the biographer, of course, points out that in her obituaries, she was inevitably described as Sartre's lover, popularizer of existentialism, and also an ardent feminist. Without much noticing, the last might contradict presenting her as the former. Right? Mm-hmm. No. In her existentialist formulation, there is no essence that we are seeking to uncover. Rather, we're always endeavoring to see what are our choices, what are our possibilities. And it's interesting to try to draw parallels between that anti-essentialist position and what we see in Buddhism, which certainly seems to share that kind of anti-essentialism when it comes to the self, although Buddha nature is sometimes construed or misconstrued as a kind of true nature that we're trying to uncover or develop. But that we understand to mean that our Buddha nature is precisely our non-essential nature. It's precisely the emptiness of self and the creation of self experience through interconnection and interdependency. I think that when we look at Dogen's picture, though, of just sitting, where he talks about the identity of Zazen and enlightenment, there's a way in which it sounds very much as if he is describing Zazen being the expression of true nature, of what it is to be most fully at the intersection of human nature and Buddha nature. Whatever those are, right? However empty those things are, it seems that Dogen has a strong sense that this form of life is the fulfillment and expression of who and what we are. That in some way, allowing ourselves to be shaped or given form by that form of life is to discover our enlightened nature. In lay practice, we have to look at our Zazen somewhat differently, since we're not going to live a monastic life that in its ritualized form is going to embody the enlightened way in every moment, but to see what does it mean to be as present as we can in all aspects of our life, including our lay life, with an awareness of impermanence and interconnection. however they manifest. And I think that the basic assumption of lay practice is that life as it is constantly teaches the truths of impermanence and interconnection, that they are always on display. You don't have to go anywhere special to discover them or realize them. There's a very subtle interplay between what it is we think we develop in our practice and the side of practice that leaves everything just as it finds it. The side of practice that just is about showing up to moment after moment experience. Nothing being developed, attained, or changed at all, except the fact that it's always changing anyway. See, there's a side of practice that I never tire of comparing to learning to make your bed every morning. And there, when we have this habit of making the bed, the point is not that at the end of every day we have a made bed. The point is at the end of the day we have become the kind of person who makes their bed every day. Right? It's, you could think of it as an Aristotelian project of developing a virtue and developing a capacity, becoming a certain kind of person through doing the activity. And you might say we have to approach it with that Aristotelian notion of moderation, that what we're trying to find is the balance between being obsessively tied to the form and making sure everything is absolutely meticulous and neat and perfect, and being obsessed with the product, and on the other hand, a kind of laxness or looseness where we say, oh, it doesn't matter whether it's made or not. In our sitting, there's definitely this dimension of showing up, of becoming the kind of person who just shows up for Zazen. Whether we think of that as daily or weekly or however we structure or practice, we become the kind of person who structures it that way. Right? We become the kind of person who's here every day. We become the kind of person who comes when they can or when it's convenient. And I would say that in some sense in lay practice, we're not trying to privilege one form over another. We're not trying to say that, you know, hope is the one person really practicing because she became a resident and she sits here every day and every period and never misses anything, right? And that's the real Zen practice. I think that would be a mistake. Rather, I think that we have to become aware of our choices and how those choices are made and conditioned. Like I say, impermanence and interconnection are not only found in the Zendo, they're everywhere. Our practice is to say, how attuned do we stay to those realities in our daily life. To what extent is our life shaped by resistance to those things, a denial of those things, an attempt through control or acquisition or distraction to try to create a false sense of constancy or a false sense of independence and autonomy and a denial of dependency on others, right? These are the questions we all have to try to keep alive in our mind as we practice together. What is it, I always ask, what is it that you think you're doing here, right? What are we performing? What are we creating? What are we discovering? Who are we being?